Bandwidth for the iPhone LE podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone LE podcast, episode 30 for November 24th, 2008. Addicted to Apps. All right, it is time for the iPhone LA podcast, the show where we discuss all things iPhone, iPod Touch, iTunes, all that good stuff. Tonight with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me back. You know, I really am amazed every week when you say come back.
We love having you, Jeff.
And, well, thanks.
No problem. And also, Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey,
how you doing, Michael?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Fantastic. All right. So, as we were going through our pre-show discussion, I guess it's called, you mentioned you wanted to talk about something called, you referred to it as app addiction. So you want to introduce that topic and maybe we can talk about it?
Yeah. Somebody mentioned this to me the other day. I can't remember if they called it app load or app addiction, or it's basically this phenomenon where, you know, you're looking at the number of screens full of applications you have on your iPhone, and you know, suddenly it grows exponentially, like every day. And the other day I realized I was in real trouble because I downloaded about four or five apps in one day, and suddenly I'm looking at the little dots. And how I guess the gauge for your app addiction would be the little dots that represent the screens full of icons down at the bottom of your screen, your iPhone screen. So if that's, you know, growing to 7 or 8 or 9, which I think is the limit,
especially
if you've gotten to the point where you're at 9 and you're agonizing over the limit, like it becomes a focus, like I can't download more iPhone apps. That's when you know, you need to seek a group or some sort of multi-step program, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I've reached, you know, I'm totally done. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that I've mentioned this before, but yeah, I have one more space open on the very last page, and that's only after I've started rationing and you know, unchecking some applications in iTunes.
Right.
And
yeah,
so that, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say that was the other part of this thing. So, you know, you have the problem of like just having too many apps, but that kind of led into the second conversation of, you know, did Apple really think about this? I mean, they had to have some idea that the App Store was going to be very popular. Now, did they just not plan that it was going to be as popular as it is, or there were going to be as many apps hitting the store so quickly? Because now I know a lot of people have reached that 9 limit and they're having to manage it. And the other thing is, I think the screens full of icons, you don't really have a good way when you have a lot of apps to sort of manage them, to organize them on the iPhone. They're just kind of all on there. And I try and group mine by categories on the different screens. But mm-hmm. even then, you know, jumping or launching an app really quickly, you know, you don't really have a good option for it. And I know there were a lot of third-party applications when jailbreaking was in, before the App Store came out, that were a lot better at sort of being little application launchers.
Yeah. Well, okay, so on the you know, topic of, you know, arranging the applications, you say you do it by groups. I actually do it by just alphabetically, with, you know, where I keep, you know, all of my Apple apps on the first page, with like OmniFocus and Twitterific. And so those are really the only two that are immune to this rule, but it's just alphabetical because I decided a while ago that, you know, I'm going to end up thinking, okay, this is a game, but it's kind of under this other category, and maybe I could put it here, and then it just kind of gets messy. So I think that alphabetical works best. But something that I've heard from a lot of people is the idea of putting an arranger, home screen management option in the iTunes application itself. So when you have your iPhone docked, you can, you know, just see a representation visually of your iPhone and then just kind of rearrange it, and maybe even have, you know, presets that say, you know, I want to rearrange, I just want to arrange it alphabetically. Or maybe, I mean, because, you know, technically the apps do have genres within the App Store. Maybe you can hit just, you know, arrange this by genre or whatever. You know, that'd be really cool.
That would actually be really cool.
Yeah. So you were also mentioning the jailbreak stuff and how they had, you know, like folders and stuff like that. That, you know, I don't know how, you know, how receptive users would be to that, because, you know, it is a phone, and the way that they, you know, kind of started off with it, you know, being a screen with just a, you know, a bunch of icons on the front, that, you know, without folders, that kind of, you know, makes sense for the type of device that it is. If you have to start going, you know, drilling down to through folders, that kind of, you know,
yeah,
gets complicated.
I'd like to see more of a spotlight, like, or, you know, almost like Quicksilver type launcher, where you do a gesture, you do some sort of stroke, and up pops just a little launcher, an application launcher, and then you can start typing the first few letters of the app you want to launch, and it just, you know, jumps to it or something like that.
Yeah, well, I think even cooler would be something like what the Google app is doing now, where you just kind of put it up to your ear and you just, you know, say something, and then maybe it'll, you know, show up like a Quicksilver and say, you know, did you want to, you know, play this song, or did you want to open this app, or, you know, whatever. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, just some sort of quicker way where we can drill deeper down across these screens. You know, it's one thing to flick, but I mean, if you have that thing that's on screen 9,
yeah,
it can take you a while to get to it.
Yeah, it takes quite a few flicks, and then sometimes I overshoot as far as where I'm going. At least alphabetically, I can, you know, figure it out pretty quickly. So, yeah, there's that.
You know, I'm thinking that Apple really didn't consider the fact that people were going to totally load their iPhones up with apps.
I don't think so either, and I don't think they really anticipated the App Store being as popular as it is either. I think
probably
they're still kind of, I'm sure they're shocked at, you know, the amount of applications that are being submitted, as well as, you know, just, you know, how many apps are being downloaded too. I think it's just, and that's why they're making, you know, changes constantly to the App Store and how they're arranging it, and, you know, it's really taken off.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
I think that
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think they just made it too easy is part of the problem. I think, Jeff, you were mentioning this earlier, that, you know, you find yourself, someone says, hey, do you know about this app? And you can literally pull your phone out at that moment and start downloading it wherever, whenever you are. And I do exactly the same thing. Someone will say, hey, have you seen that app? Or I'll see something pop up on Twitter, and it's like I'm downloading it, you know, a few minutes later.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time.
I've done this at dinner. It's kind of bad. I think we're supposed to be socializing and talking to each other at dinner.
Well, in some circles, that is socializing.
In the iPhone Alley circle, yes, that is socializing. So, yeah, we were out at dinner, and I said, hey, have you seen this game? And no, let me get it real quick. And, you know, then all of a sudden we were all playing the same game and, you know, not paying attention to each other. So, yeah, there you go. So let's move on to our first topic regarding the Google application. We talked about this briefly, I think, last week. Basically, the Google application is the same Google app as we've had before. They've simply added, well, for the most part, I think, the major changes that they've added, the voice recognition into it. So you just simply open the app, put it up to your ear without touching a single button in the app, and, you know, speak what you want to search for. And then it has, you know, voice recognition, and it'll, you know, do a Google search for you right there. So you can click that, you know, whatever, you know, result, it'll open up in Safari. And, you know, if you go back, if you hit the back key in Safari, it will actually bring you back to the Google application. And this is brought up, you know, with several people, including Erica Sadoun over at Ars Technica. A lot of people have been, you know, looking at this and saying, well, you know, this, it looks like Google's using some undocumented stuff and getting kind of special treatment from Apple as far as, you know, the feature to just put it up to your ear and have it, you know, recognize that and start doing something. And I think also that the you know, going back into the application, just having Safari bring up the app is also part of that. excuse me. So basically, Erica found that they are using both private frameworks, you know, for developing, which developers are technically supposed to only be using public frameworks. And I guess, as far as I can tell from the article, if a developer starts using private frameworks, which are only available to Apple applications, those and they submit those to the App Store, those are generally immediately just kind of, you know, rejected, and you know, that developer is kind of banished from the App Store. And then as far as they're also using undocumented frameworks that aren't necessarily private to get all this stuff done. And, you know, that's kind of an iffy thing. So I guess the question is this unfair to other developers that, you know, Apple obviously has Eric Schmidt on their board, you know, from Google, Google's CEO. And, you know, they've been doing a lot of, you know, stuff together on the iPhones, you know, especially Google Maps and that kind of thing. And so, it, you know, I doubt Apple doesn't realize that Google did some special stuff with this application. So is this unfair to developers? Adam, do you want to take that one? What do you think?
You know, I haven't, has anybody determined that Google just isn't like a number of apps that I've seen sort of flying under the radar? Because this seems to go back to that topic of where we're seeing rejected applications and people don't really know how Apple's applying the rules. I think I saw an article this last week also from Erica, where she had a friend who was upset because his iPhone app got rejected. And I forget the specific reason that was cited, but literally he got very upset, sort of, you know, vented to her, I guess. And then when he calmed down a day later, resubmitted the app with zero changes, and then it got approved.
Hmm.
So
nice.
Yeah. So rejected in 1 week and approved the next week with zero changes. And I've been hearing more and more stories like this of developers just resubmitting until their app actually makes it into the store. And there's another case, like I think I read a while back, and I don't know if Apple's changed the rules on this, but the vibrating, you know, using a vibrate is supposedly in the documentation only supposed to be used for like an alert. So if you pop up an alert message or something like that. And I know there's a number of games out there that now take advantage of the vibration sensor for doing different things. I have, was it Motion X or Motion Poker X, where you shake the dice and as the dice roll, it triggers the vibrate mode on the phone. And that was supposed to be specifically held just for alerts, which makes sense when you think about it, because that's, you know, someone, you get an incoming phone call, it's on vibrate, you don't want to have that confused with some game or some other event that's going on the phone. But these apps are out there. So I have to wonder if Google just didn't do it and Apple, you know, it just got through.
Like they just got the right inspector, the person who doesn't care, the person who, if you keep submitting it to, it'll eventually get to that person who just kind of says, okay, whatever, yeah, it doesn't
crash.
I just
think Apple's not watching that closely, and I think they're not really, I mean, when stuff gets through, then they kind of, after the fact, have to go, well, you know, are we going to shut it down? Are we going to make them change it? Now, in that regard, you might argue, Apple's, I'm certainly aware of it now, so the question is, are they going to go enforce that rule against Google and give them special privilege in that way?
I'm gonna go ahead and say they're probably gonna let it slide.
Yeah.
And I think as far as I think we were expecting the Google app to hit on maybe a day or two before it actually came out, and there was some speculation as to, you know, maybe because of the way it was doing certain things as far as, you know, seeing that you have it up to your face or something like that, that Apple was kind of looking at it and just going to possibly reject it. So I think that Google, Apple is well aware of what Google is doing. And because Google is such a big player, not only in general on the internet, but also on the iPhone, I doubt they're going to, you know, go back on it and say, well, you're going to have to change this or pull this out or just, you know, get rid of the app until you fix it or something like that. I think it's going to stay the way it is. And this, I guess, kind of ties into the fact that, you know, developers want more features than are available right now in the iPhone. Such as, and as far as, like, for example, the proximity sensor thing, that is undocumented. It's not under a private framework, so you can actually call that and you won't, you know, you won't get a slap on the wrist for that. But there's just, it just shows that there are so many uses for the myriad of sensors and other, you know, technologies in the iPhone that aren't available, or at least publicly available to developers yet, that are of, you know, can be used in very interesting ways?
You know, I've been sitting here mulling this over, and I've come to a completely different conclusion. I don't think that the new Google app is flying under the radar. I think Apple may have helped Google along the way so that they could make the app. And so there was never a thing about, well, geez, can this get approved or not? I think Apple had a hand throughout the whole process.
Yeah, that's very possible. And I think that would be the best way to go, especially, I mean, obviously Google knows what they're doing as far as, you know, using either undocumented features or, you know, ones that are only privately available to Apple. You know, being so close to Apple, I think that, you know, that makes a lot of sense that they just kind of went to Apple and said, we want to do this, because it's a very cool thing. And, you know, honestly, I could certainly see the Google app ending up in the next iPhone ad too, because it's just so cool, because it's just simply, you know, hold it up to your ear. And it, you know, because it's just one of those things that Apple really likes is the use of that. And, you know, maybe we'll see it open up to developers soon. As far as, you know, all the stuff that they're using there. But yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's cool as long as you're a Yank.
Yeah, there is that.
Right.
I don't know if I'm sure you've received those reports that I got several emails from people in the UK or Australia or pretty much any place that has an accent. And it was funny because I think on MacBreak Weekly or Twit, they mentioned, or no, I think it was Ken Ray actually who mentioned people from the Deep South or maybe New York or Texas or something like that. Anybody with a thick American accent might have an issue as well. Apparently, you know, the app only wants to work with good, you know, standard American accents.
Yeah, I have heard
it wants a Midwest accent, and that's it.
Yeah, and you know, I think that on MacBreak they were discussing whether or not it used, you know, just there was someone on the other end listening to submissions and typing them out, which, you know, that actually happens nowadays. I mean, if you use like Twitter phone, for example,
right. That's like the Flintstones, isn't it?
It is. It's very Flintstones. But no, I mean, obviously they're not. Otherwise, you know, they need to get new people in there because they don't know how to recognize
it. It happens
that.
way too quickly to not be computer translating it.
Now, do you think it'll work if you don't have an internet connection? Are they sending it off to like a Google server to figure that out? Because I'm thinking that there's, you know, the app would take up much more space than it does if it actually had a database of what to listen for.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not going to be able to return Google results anyway if it doesn't have a web connection.
Right, right.
But it's my understanding it's very similar to how their Google 411 service works, which you know, service.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, definitely. Okay, moving on. We just saw this today. According to Arnold Kim at Touch Arcade, a developer has found that the second generation iPod Touch is faster than the iPhone 3G, and the first generation iPod Touch. Basically, this developer does 3D gaming. Develops 3D games and has noticed a significant difference in performance in their games when, you know, using the different devices. And according to the developer, and I'm looking at who the developer is, the game is Touch Sports Tennis. Handheld Games Corp. is the developer. And they're saying that the second generation iPod Touch had its processor quietly boosted to 532 megahertz, while the original iPhone 3G, or the iPhone 3G, original iPhone, and first generation iPod Touch run at 412 megahertz. So, and according to the developer, they think that the differences must be more than that, because there are performance differences between the different models as well. So the iPhone 3G comes in second as far as performance, iPhone, and then iPod Touch, the original iPod Touch. So I guess, you know, the first question I think is, you know, were iPhone 3G owners kind of shortchanged because you're thinking, all right, I'm getting the next generation iPhone 3G or the next generation iPhone, and you know I'm paying you know my $300 for it or whatever to get in, and you know I pay every month for whatever, and it's supposed to be you know the best of you know Apple's handheld touch devices. What's the deal with the iPod Touch getting the best, you know, performance? And, you know, obviously you see the ads, you see, you know, the iPod Touch is the funnest, you know, iPod ever, and they have all the games on it, and they're really pushing this as like a, you know, a gaming device as well as an iPod. But doesn't it seem a little unfair? I mean, what do you guys think about this?
Well, let me ask you how well the GPS in the iPod Touch works.
That's true. We do have the GPS.
And that 3G connection or the edge connection on the iPod Touch, how's that working out?
Right.
You know, it might be faster than the iPhone 3G, but I don't see that as a big deal because there's so many other features that you have on the iPhone. And if they had to throttle back the processor speed just a little bit to balance out the power consumption.
That's very true, yeah.
You know, okay, I can live with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, if you look at it, technically, I think all the processor in all of those is 620 megahertz. I'm not sure about the newest iPod Touch, if that has a higher, you know, maximum CPU, but they are, the rest of them are all clocked down to 412. So technically, that could be changed in firmware or software. I'm not sure, but I think that could be changed as far as, you know, pushing out an update goes. But yeah, it makes sense as far as, you know, if you have GPS and the edge and or 3G, cellular networks going and all that other stuff, it makes sense, you know, that you want to, you know, save power in places that you can.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So there you have it. It, you know, I haven't seen the difference. I haven't, you know, played with the other one. I doubt, you know, there will be much of a difference, and I don't think most of us care. I've been having a fun time with my iPhone anyway. The one thing that the developer is saying, though, is don't go for a first-generation iPod Touch because there is a significant difference there. So there you go.
You know, Michael, I think it comes down to how Apple has to balance, you know, the power versus the battery life,
right,
like we mentioned. And chances are they've also tweaked the graphics down, it sounds like, because I saw that same article you're talking about, and they were showing performance increases that would be much higher, or citing, I guess, performance increases much higher than what would just account for from the CPU difference. I mean, that's not a huge CPU difference, but... You know, I think it comes down to do the apps work and do they run and are they playable? And that's all most people are going to care about at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is a phone. So, you know, if you can get, you know, tennis going on there, if you can get Super Monkey Ball or what have you going on there and it's, you know, playable, you know, rock on. It's fun. Yeah. So it's not.
Yeah, I don't think anybody cares if it's, you know, 60 frames a second or 100 frames a second too much.
Right, except for you know the few you know crazy gamers out there, but you know I don't think it's going to sell less iPhones. I don't think they're going to sell less iPhones because of it. So moving on, do we want to talk about Walmart carrying the iPhone December 28th? According to Boy Genius report, the iPhone 3G will be coming to Walmart December 28th and select Sam's Club stores. Is this a big deal? We already have the iPhone at Best Buy, AT&T, and of course the Apple stores. Does the iPhone need more exposure, and especially in a Walmart kind of, you know, demographic?
Hey, more iPhones sold is more iPhones sold, no matter where you sell them. Are they going to be cheaper?
I haven't heard anything about that as far as from Boy Genius. I doubt they will be. They may be like $2 cheaper. I've seen, you know, iPods in Walmart that are, you know, a dollar or two underneath, you know, whatever Apple's selling it for. But I think it's just a matter of exposure.
I don't believe it.
You don't believe that we're going to see it in the Walmart?
No. Okay. You know how Apple is about the whole user experience. from getting the product all the way through to using the product. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see Walmart as the place where you're going to get the type of buying experience that Apple wants.
Because there's no one there to help you out, or?
Right. And if you take a look at the people that are typically going to be available to help you, and all right, so let me add in the little other part that everyone needs to know. Yes, there are some really good people that work at Walmart, but by and large, when you go in, the odds are that you're going to get the person that doesn't know how to process the type of transaction you need, meaning how to set you up with your AT&T account, activate your iPhone, and get you out the door.
That is very likely. And they do have the cellular, you know, little kiosk in the back, you know, where that kind of thing goes on. But, you know, the people aren't there all the time for that, too. So
right. So I'm just not buying the whole Walmart thing, and I may very well be wrong. You know, we'll know come the 28th.
And, you know, why do you guys think, let's say that Walmart is going to carry it, why do you think the 28th instead of, you know, earlier? You know, why do you think after Christmas?
Maybe for supply.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. It's strange. I just thought that was pretty interesting. They're doing it after Christmas. Moving on, do we want to talk about the MMS coming to the iPhone possibly?
Yes, we do, because it angers me, and it angers me along with something else, and I don't know if you want me to save this for when we talk about 2.2, but there's something in 2.2 that we're not getting. I'm getting really irate about Apple selectively enabling features, and I'm sure the MMS is a carrier thing. I don't understand it with AT&T, because AT&T phones are perfectly capable of doing MMS, and it's my understanding the iPhone is perfectly, well, obviously, if this turns out to be true, the iPhone's perfectly capable of doing MMS.
Yeah. And there have been jailbreak, you know, applications out there for a long time that allow MMS. I think Swirly MMS is one of those. But yeah, go ahead on your rant.
The emoji.
Yeah.
Came to 2.2, and apparently you can only get it on SoftBank in Japan, or at least that's what my research has sort of uncovered so far. And it's sort of like, you know, that was one of those features I even made fun of. It's not that, I mean, it's not a killer feature for me, but it's like, if the thing can do it and you throw it in the software, why not let everybody have it?
Right. Yeah. So for people who don't know, according to Macworld, Telia, a Swedish carrier, is looking into getting MMS on iPhones for, you know, for them, for their customers. And they're looking to do this via a third party. I may pronounce this incorrectly, Mobispine. They're looking to use a third party, and it's going to be a quote unquote, you know, official MMS you know, application. So you know, Adam, I mean, I'll direct this to you, because you seem to, you know, be supportive of MMS. Do we need MMS, and why, you know, why do you think we need MMS in the iPhone?
The only reason we need MMS, I mean, personally, it doesn't matter too much to me. I'm sure if the feature was there, I would use it. I am not an MMS user. I'm not typically an SMS user either. But I know so many people who do use MMS, and it's such a basic feature. It's on like burner phones you get on right, a lot of these carriers, AT&T included. I mean, they have cheap phones that can do MMS, and it sounds stupid. It's such a simple thing, but you know, it's an image attachment on an SMS message, and people love SMS. People who are into SMS and MMS love it, and they use it all the time. And so it's like, why not just let it happen? You right. know, it can't be the extra bits of data, because look at all the data
right.
he's letting us throw around with the iPhone right now. I mean, an extra JPEG here and there is not going to kill their network. So it doesn't make sense to me that it's not there, because it's right up there with cut and paste. It's right up there with all the, you know, the basic voice dialing, you know, basic features that the iPhone doesn't have that all these other cell phones have that Apple can obviously do. We've seen, you know, the Google app prove that there's tons of apps that prove they can do voice dialing. So it's like, why aren't they putting these basic features in there? And the sort of the lame excuse we were given was with things like cut and paste. Well, it's on the list, but they're just not high up on the list.
Right. Do you think that the lack of MMS is keeping, you know, certain customers, well, a significant amount of customers from buying the iPhone?
No, I at least not in the States. Now, there's certain countries. I think maybe Sweden is one of these places. I think in the Netherlands, right, isn't SMS and MMS kind of really popular way of communicating? And obviously, you know, as was pointed out with the addition of emoji for the Japanese people, that was a killer feature. So I think in certain markets, and that's why I think we're seeing them say it's going to be just in this one market,
right,
and why we're seeing these features just in single markets or single countries. I just question, you know, it's sort of like if you're going to put it in the software, it's not that hard to open it up across the board. You might as well add it for everybody. Why not? But it sounds like these guys are using a third party, and maybe I had missed that part of the story. So maybe this is a whole different angle on it.
Well, I think that, yeah, they will be using a third party, and I'm going to hold on to my next question for a second and say, you know, does Apple want to add features to the iPhone that are, you know, add options that you have to pay more for? You know what I mean? So I guess with the original iPhone, everything, you know, when you bought your iPhone and you had your iPhone plan, everything was covered. You had 200 text messages available, built in. You had all, you can surf the internet as much as you want. Visual voicemail, all that stuff was included in the price. You couldn't not get it. Obviously that changed with the iPhone 3G. You do actually have to pay for text messages now.
Right.
But does Apple want to, because that just kind of starts diluting the, you know, the great, you know, full experience that Apple kind of goes for, with this. And yeah, so maybe that would be solved by saying, all right, let's let a third party do that and possibly even say, let's, you know, pre-install this application, on the iPhone, or just simply say for those customers who do want MMS in that market, you know, go, you know, subscribe to, you know, it's $5 extra a month. And, you know, then you need to go get this application and then it'll work. So is, you know, it should Apple be adding, you know, those kind of features, even though you would have to actually pay extra for them? And is a third party solution the way to go?
I don't think a third party solution is the way to go. I'd like to see them integrate it. And as far as paying extra, I think, you know, Apple and AT&T or whatever the carrier is going to be perfectly fine with making extra money. And
right, yeah.
Plus, you know, they're going to be adding tethering, right?
That's the rumor. We did, supposedly that was coming in the 2.2, but, you know, that hasn't magically been turned on. There may be a, you know, something that they push down as far as like on the network and, or just like an sure. update to iTunes or something. But yeah,
they're certainly thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So let's move on to 2.2. I guess we saved all the boring stuff for the beginning, and we're going to talk about the fun stuff now, the 2.2 update.
Wait, there's an update out?
Yeah. Didn't you get the text message, Jeff? I like that they're sending out text messages now to everybody saying, hey, in case you didn't, you know, realize it, in case you're not, you know, a blogger and you spend every minute of your life on the internet, there's an update available. So,
yeah. And actually, one thing that I like about those messages that I didn't like in the beginning when they first started sending them out, now they're coming out like in the afternoon. Before, they'd show up at, you know, like 5 in the morning on a Saturday and wake me up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not good. Afternoon is definitely much better for that kind of thing. And, you know, they're obviously free too. So, and even for stuff like the power adapter swap out, they did a text message for that too. So that's really good. I'm glad they, you know, they're taking advantage of that.
Right. And I think that's actually a really smart move because it's so easy to let everyone know about important updates or, in the case of the power adapters, a very important product recall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
I'm sure Apple will call it a product swap out, not a recall.
Right. I haven't actually swapped mine out yet. I should get on that soon.
I have an envelope sitting here on my desk.
Do they send you the new power adapter first?
Yes. Okay. And so my old power adapter's in there. All right. So here's a tip for people: if you haven't done the swap out yet and you're going to do it via mail, when the envelope shows up, don't do like I did and just cut across the top, because you reuse the same envelope, and I didn't know that. And so now I've been looking through the closet trying to figure out where my packing tape is so I can tape the top of this thing back shut again and then call, I think it's DHL, and have them come pick it up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you can, do we know what the URL is? I guess it's, you know, you can go to apple.com/iPhone and you'll find it there. So if you haven't done it, you know.
Yeah. If you go to the iPhone support page, so apple.com/support, and then go to the iPhone specific section, I think it's on the right hand side of the window. There's a thing you can click, and then you put in your serial number from your phone, and then it just takes care of everything.
Cool. All right. So let's move on to the 2.2 update. One of the most significant additions, the podcast downloads. And we talked about this. I think almost all of the features that we see, at least the major ones, they were rumored and they kind of came out like they said they would. Podcast downloads. Now you can go to the iTunes application and actually browse the podcast directory over, you know, cellular network or over Wi-Fi. So you can check out both video and audio podcasts, as well as, you know, if you have a podcast subscription in your iPod application, you can actually click a link there at the very bottom of that list of podcasts that you already have, and then it'll show you, you know, more episodes from that podcast. So you can download them on the fly without having to even sync back to your computer. What do you guys think? So is it well done? Do you like it? Are you satisfied with it?
I'm liking it so far. Now, Michael, you said that you could do this over like 3G or Edge also. I thought that the podcast part required Wi-Fi.
It does not.
Really?
You All can, right. As far as I know, you can download, and I don't know if this was confirmed or not when Apple officially released it, but the rumor was that you can only download up to 10 megabytes over the cellular. Otherwise, you have to be on Wi-Fi. But otherwise, yeah, you can get to it either way. On cellular or Wi-Fi.
Okay. Huh. Well, good to know.
Yeah. And you can also delete podcasts ad hoc if you want to. You can, you know, swipe and delete an episode. And that's pretty good because if you're downloading more episodes, then you kind of want that. So there's also, they've changed the way they sort the podcasts. So now the thing that we've been complaining about as far as, you know, them not sorting it chronologically. So from, you know, newest to oldest, now it will sort from oldest to newest, so you can tap on the top one and it will actually play through each one of those and it won't be crazy. And so now I'm thinking of all the people who emailed me and said, you know, that I'm crazy for, you know, wanting it to play out that way. Now they're going to be upset. So I think that Apple should actually you know, provide an option to you know, toggle that on and off, at least the auto play through, because that can be irritating for, you know, in general, either way, regardless of how it's playing through. So there's that. There's also the street view. excuse me. So basically you can go wherever street view is available, and it's not apparent when you go to the iPhone, but if you're searching around an area such as Chicago or San Francisco, you can drop a pin and tap the little orange guy and you'll get a street view right there. Adam, what do you think of the street view?
It's really cool, actually. It took me a while to figure out where it was, and at first I thought, oh man, they slighted the first gen iPhone owners just like the iPod Touch owners. But I eventually figured it out and figured out how to use it, and I really like it. I like how they transition in and out. The one thing that's a little bit disappointing, and this has probably been mentioned other places, but I did get a chance before Street View came out on the 2.2 update to play around with a G1, a Google phone, which has the built-in compass.
Right.
And so it has the added benefit that when you're in Street View, as you move the phone around, it can track, you know, which direction you're sort of pointed in. So
okay, that's cool.
Yeah, it'd be cool if the iPhone could do that, because, you know, it just kind of orients you, I think. However, I don't know if it always comes up north or what. And of course, you can swipe around. I was surprised at how smooth the scrolling was. Only thing I did notice is that when I was out on Edge, it's a bit slow to update the view in some instances. So yeah, that makes it a little less usable. Overall, it's very well done and very well implemented, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that as far as the way that you bring it up, you know, having to drop a pin or to get to it, that's kind of, you know, I'm not that impressed with it. I think that they maybe should have done something, you know, like like just, you know, by curling up the map instead, you know, to get to that.
That's what I assumed. I mean, when I first went into the map application after updating to 2.2, I tapped the little curled paper thing.
Right.
And then, excuse me, and then was immediately disappointed because I couldn't find Street View. And I messed around for like 15 minutes before I actually had to look up a location and then noticed there was a new icon. And I went, okay, well, let's tap and see what happens. So to me, that's a little backwards. I mean, what if you don't actually know a specific location that you want to go to and then go into Street View? What if you just want to like find a general area and go into Street View and see if there's something you recognize?
Right. You can drop a pin, just drop the purple pin and do it that way. But I still think it's a bad way to do it. They should probably have a different, like just a button when you curl up the map. And you can
and it's a street view. And it just zooms you in there.
Yeah, and it does the traditional, you know, here's the little guy, drop him, you know, wherever you want. And, you know, just like a pin. I think it would work the exact same way as, you know, dropping a pin does. And actually outline the streets that, you know, are available for street view too. Because
that would be helpful.
You kind of have to guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Also included in the update, you get walking directions, as we mentioned before. So now I know that it takes one day and an hour to walk to my friend's house in Chicago. So that's fun.
That's good to know.
It's also, you know, handy for, you know, shorter distances, of course. You can also get public transit directions, which totally, totally rocks for, you know, anybody living in an area where that's kind of plugged into Google. So, if, you know, for me, for example, if I want to go to, you know, Chicago, it'll say, you know, you take this train downtown, you get off at this stop, and then you take the blue line here, and then you get off, and, you know, then you walk, you know, for 10 minutes, and there you are. And I think that even past that, it's got some really nice features that I haven't even seen in the Google's web interface for getting the public transit directions, in that you can actually specify either what time you want to leave or what time you want to get to your destination by. So it's, you know, you say, I want to get here by 5 o'clock, and it says, okay, well, you need to start off by taking this train at this time in order for it to all work out. And you can actually change, you know, the time that you get on, you know, different things, you know, buses and trains and all that. So it's very cool. I think they did a really, really good job with the public transit stuff. So people in, you know, areas where that's offered, that's going to be really, really nice for them.
That's actually like a killer feature right there.
Yeah, totally. Because, you know, whenever I go to Chicago, I always have to, you know, get out the computer, plan it out beforehand and, you know, make sure I email, you know, get on this train and this stop and whatever, email that to myself so I don't forget. So now I can just kind of wing it, you know, whenever I go. So that's, I can't wait for the next time that I get to go downtown and, you know, try that out. So, yeah. Adam, you mentioned before, the iPod Touch owners were, kind of excluded from the fun Google Maps stuff. Basically, they don't get the Street View, the walking directions, or the public transit stuff. And that's you know, that's it sucks. Yeah, definitely. And you know, the only sent me an instant message saying, you know, what the heck? And the only thing I can think of is that it's the same old accounting thing. You know, that they can't add features without charging.
Oh, I didn't think about that one. I was wondering if it was somewhat related to the lack of GPS and only having Wi-Fi, because it's not going to be very, as you pointed out, it's really useful to get the transit directions when you're out and about and you're not at home and you may or may not be near a Wi-Fi connection. Now, you know, that's a weak argument, but you know, if it can't locate you, if it can't find you some other way beyond Wi-Fi, it does make it somewhat less usable in sort of the way I think most people would use it, which is on a spur of the moment kind of thing.
Yeah, but you know, getting directions while you're out, you know, in the car is kind of a goofy concept to think of too with the iPod Touch, because you're very unlikely to find a Wi-Fi spot.
Exactly. So,
yeah, my assumption was that this is simply because you don't have 3G or Edge on the iPod Touch.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with the accounting thing, though, because I think
More sense to me, because, again, I don't think Apple has an interest for excluding the feature from the iPod Touch. I mean, if you have an available Wi-Fi connection, why not let the people have it? And if they don't, you simply throw up a message saying, you know, hey, we need an active net connection to get you this data.
All right, so maybe this is a feature that iPod Touch users will get with the next update that's big enough that Apple charges for it.
That's what I'm thinking. So, and if you do have an iPod Touch, there are hacks available. I haven't looked into exactly how that works. We're going to throw that up on the site later on. But I'm assuming it just has to do with, I mean, you have to jailbreak. I'm almost positive on that one, but then it would just be a simple matter of, you know, and I say simple, but a simple matter of changing, you know, some stuff in plists, I would assume, you know, just kind of flipping a bit from off to on or something like that. So, but it is in there, I guess that's the whole point of that. So, aside from that, they say that, you can also, this is really, it sounded kind of dumb, but I do like the feature that it'll show the approximate address of where a pin is. If you drop just a purple pin somewhere, it'll show you're within this address block here, and it already did that previously. Right on the map, it'll show you you're in the the 3000 block or whatever. But now it'll show that on the pin and an approximation. I think that kind of came with the whole Street View thing because they kind of approximate that when you're looking in a certain direction with Street View. And also for those who, would use it, you can also just say, hey, let's, share this location. So you drop a purple pin or, you just kind of, type up an address or whatever. You can go into the options where you would say, get directions to or whatever. There's a new button where you can actually email a URL to that location to someone else. So even if you send it to a friend who has another iPhone, they'll actually click that and it'll bring it up in Google Maps. So that's pretty cool. There's also a new home screen shortcut. And I was talking to Ken, macOS Ken, for his day six podcast. Check that out, macOSKen.com. I was talking about the home screen shortcut. We went back and forth on whether or not this was, totally lame or very cool. And I think this ties into our app addiction discussion.
It's very cool for me.
It's very cool for me,
too. By
the way,
hi, my name is Jeff, and I'm an iPhone app addict.
I'm an app addict, too. So, when I'm on my ninth page or whatever, hitting that home button one more time brings you right to the home screen, to the first page when you hit it, when you're already on the home screen. So that's very cool. I've been using that a lot. It's been a little difficult to get out of the habit of just swiping, 20 times, to the right. But, now.
Oh, I didn't have any trouble at all getting out of that habit.
Yeah. There's also, you can also toggle the autocorrection. I remember there was a petition online for, saying, hey, we don't, some of us don't want the autocorrection on there. And I think that's best. That really applies to people who speak more than one language and, possibly, talking with other people in their family, in a different language than English, although their primary language is English. Because that's a problem if you have the autocorrection on.
I didn't even think of it that way. I just thought of it as, finally, when I send out an SMS to someone and it says duck in the middle of it, I won't have that problem anymore.
Good. I think Jackie from Ars Technica has that same problem. So
yeah.
I've heard that from a couple people.
I started typing frack all the time.
Yeah.
And my iPhone actually learned it. And so I'll start typing frack and it'll pop it up as a suggestion for me now.
Yeah. And my iPhone also suggests the word frigtard for me too. So I'm happy about that.
Nice.
So yeah. You can turn that off. And also the App Store has gotten some changes too. You can, more sorting options. You can say, all the free ones, all the, paid ones and all the, sort, give me the newest ones. And you can do that in each category. So that's very cool. You can also bring up all the screenshots for an application from, the App Store on the iPhone. And you can also, this is something I didn't notice until someone pointed it out to me. They brought the update all button back.
Yes. That was really nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
another thing those of us who suffer from app addiction need.
Yeah, I opened it up today and it said, you have 12 updates. And I'm thinking, great, I'll just hit that one button and I won't have to worry about it. And I've also noticed that, previously, you know, they fixed the whole, you know, apps jumping around when you update them.
Right.
They fixed that by saying, okay, well, we'll just kind of save a spot for that app, and when it's done installing, it will move to that spot. Now it doesn't even do that. It just kind of stays in the same spot, you know, and updates like you would think it should work. So that they've added a little more polish to that. They've also, I've heard reports of better battery life, that that it's even better now. Have you guys seen better battery life with your iPhone?
I haven't noticed a change yet.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't really noticed the difference, but I never had a problem before because I'm still on the first gen.
Yeah, and I've been putting mine in batteries anyway for the last couple of days. what are you guys most excited about as far as the features? What do you like best about the update? Jeff, you want
my iPhone feels faster now.
I'm gonna go with that one. I'm gonna say my favorite is the stability and the snappiness now of the entire iPhone. It just feels so much better. I don't know. I don't remember how exactly how nice it was back in iPhone 1.0. But I'm gonna say that it's probably the fastest I think my iPhone's ever worked, and the smoothest everything's gone.
Oh yeah!
I just hope it lasts.
I do too. Yeah,
yeah. I hope it lasts too.
Have you noticed? I mean, I've noticed with mine, it'll be fine after a new update. It'll seem snappier and a little more stable, and then there's some sort of corruption or creep that happens under the hood, and a few months down the line, I'm restoring it to kind of get it back to behaving nicely.
Yeah,
and then it just kind of creeps again.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and I think I had that same thought of this is a little snappier when I updated to 2.1, and then shortly after, of course, I then realized no, it's doing the same goofy stuff. Well, not as much, just a little better in some areas. But so far, I haven't run into an instance where it starts chugging, and I think they've really worked out a lot of the bugs. As far as I think, a lot of it had to do with memory management for third-party applications. And I think they solved that. And another feature that I totally forgot about, I think they may have rewritten Safari. They've done something radical to Safari because it's so much faster. They obviously changed the interface to it, but it just works so much better. And I know, Jeff, that was your one complaint, your major complaint with the iPhone before.
Oh my God. Yeah. If I could have put a different web browser on the iPhone, I would have. And I don't even care what I would have put Opera on my iPhone. Okay, that's how.
And Jeff hates Opera.
I do. I totally hate Opera. So, but for now, it seems stable. We'll see what I say next week.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, as far as I was able to trip up Safari pretty quickly with 2.1. But I've been messing around doing really mean things to it, zooming in and out on images. Double tapping. It's just so snappy. Even there was one thing that I could always do to make Safari crash every single time, and that was
launch it. That's all I had to do.
There you go. No, it was if I go to the full on Twitter website, and I go into my preferences and I try to change something like my password, for example, they have some sort of JavaScript running to always look at what you're typing, so it'll say these two passwords match or they don't. And that always tripped up Safari and eventually made it crash. So I went there, I did it, and I was able to successfully change my password. I'm not saying it was fast. It was still pretty clicky, but it was quicker than before, and it did not crash my Safari at all. So
that's a good thing.
When I saw that happen, I thought, they've really got, stuff going. And I think that, this update is really what we need to see before we see more features, more radical features such as copy paste and maybe even opening it up to developers for, more services such as, maybe access to the camera or even the push notifications, because that's, that was always my thought, is that they need to stabilize what they have so far before they start adding stuff on. And so I think that in the coming, months, we're going to see possibly reports of, more features coming in, whatever betas that they see to developers. And I think that we're close to getting the push notifications. I sure hope so. Why don't we have those yet? I really want them.
That would make my life a lot easier.
Certainly need that before those radical features, you know, those radical Mac 1.0 features like copy-paste.
Mac 1.0 features. So we're going to say that the iPhone sucks more than Mac 1.0?
Different. Let's say Mac 1.0 had a feature that the iPhone doesn't. I don't even know if was there a 1.0. I'm probably going to get in trouble because I don't remember the progression.
Oh, yeah, there was a System 1.
Yeah.
System 1.0.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
But it had copy-paste.
Yeah, it did.
Darn it.
I think we're going to see, you know, 2.3, we're going to see the push notifications. I hope we don't have to wait till 3.0 for copy-paste. it's certainly possible.
I think it's a particularly big pet peeve of mine because I try and respond to most, if not all, of my email for the MacCast, and very often that involves putting links in for people so that they can find the stuff that I'm referencing them to, specifically applications, and I can't do it on the iPhone. I have to literally just type out the name of the app and say Google for it if I'm replying from the iPhone.
And then, you come off sounding, you know, terse.
Like a jerk, yeah. It's like, I'm not really a jerk. I'd put the URL in here if my iPhone
would let me. I promise I'm not a jerk.
Me.
Please Google it.
I don't say that. I usually just give them the name and hopefully they can figure it out. But, you know, I just feel bad because normally I would put the URL in there. You know, if I'm referencing an Apple support article, it's just much more, you know, helpful. And the only workaround is to bring up the one page and email it. And then I've got the opposite problem. I've got to remember what their email address is.
Yeah, I just put it off. Honestly, when I see something where I have to do more than just like type out a thanks, you know, I just put it off because, you know, part of that is because I'm so dependent on Text Expander from the guys at Smile on My Mac. I love Text Expander.
Oh, I love Text Expander.
I go to another computer and I'm thinking, you know, I type out my shortcut and I go, you know, why isn't it working? So sidetracked. Yeah, but I, you know what I'd really like to see, first of all, yes, I would love to see Text Expander. I don't know how that would possibly work on the iPhone because I think it requires a background process. But the one thing that I would really like is like a Gmail-focused mail client because, you know, I'm one of those dorks who uses Mailplane instead of, you know, mail.app just because I love the way that Google, does, you know, the entire interface with the labels and the searching and, you know, the fact that I don't have to download it to my computer. Yeah, it's not on my computer and it's not offline, but, you know, my computer doesn't feel like a real computer when it's not on the internet anyway, so I just close it and cry. So it's not a big deal for me. I guess it's a tangent on everything, but I would love to see, you know, like a Mailplane or a Gmail application or just... please, just maybe some better support for Gmail in the mail application. So, you know, Adam, use Gmail?
Yeah, I use Gmail. And you know, so what I do in when I'm on the iPhone and I do need to put a number of links in an email is I'll usually just, you know, stick a label on it that says follow up, you know, basically when you get back to your computer.
Yeah.
I have like follow up label and do exactly that thing. So that's how I manage that. So I love Gmail.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's move on to some of the problems that have been reported, with 2.2. I haven't had one problem. I didn't even restore my phone. I said, you know what, I'm going to do what, you know, 90% of everyone's going to do is just the simple update to, you know, to see how it works out. And I've had a great experience so far, but some people have been reporting, that third-party applications have been broken by the update. I've actually seen that some applications, I mean, I haven't opened every single app on my phone yet to test it out, obviously because I have 9 pages of apps. And I have noticed, you know, for example, for Twitterific, it had a, you know, the gloss that the iPhone puts on some of the applications because the developer can say, hey, you know, I don't want to mess with, you know, making the gloss look just like the other applications, and the iPhone will do that automatically. And for some reason, Twitterific had, you know, something in there that wasn't correctly supported. It had the gloss on there, and when that came, you know, that changed. And I sound like a total dork because I'm, you know, whining about the gloss on, you know, one of my apps, but I've seen a fix there anyway. But some people are saying, you know, problems with third-party apps. That's because supposedly because Apple changed some stuff in their frameworks, so. Either wait for an update or you know, try uninstalling and reinstalling the app if you have a problem with one of your applications. Also, I've seen some people are saying internet connectivity over the cellular network are, you know, that's having some issues there. Basically, kind of either toggle it on and off, you know, I guess power off your phone and try that if you haven't already. Or some people have been saying you have to switch to Edge for now, which kind of sucks. Also, SIM problems, like saying, you know, SIM not inserted or PIN lock, pop out your SIM card if you're having that problem. Also, the App Store for some people is very slow. I haven't had any of these problems. Have you guys had any weird issues with 2.2?
You know, the only problem I'm having is on an iPod Touch that is not letting me delete emails.
I have seen that problem. Yeah, that's another. I think that is an AOL account by any chance?
No, actually, it's on one of my own domains on Dreamhost.
Okay, they've as far as I've seen, the solution to that is to delete the account and then enter all of your information for it. But that is a known issue as far as you not being able to delete email, which is kind of strange.
It is, and it's the same account on my iPhone. No problems.
Yeah. So
just on the iPod Touch.
I'm thinking just delete the thing and it'll work out if you delete it and put it back.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the only issue I've come up with. And I've done the update on my first gen iPhone, my iPhone 3G, and on an iPod Touch. And I've come up with one issue across all three devices, and it's only on the one device.
Well, that's good. Definitely. Adam, have you had any problems?
None at all. It was a smooth update, and I just updated, you know, did the standard update right over the top, it's been, you know, like I said, I hope it sticks around because it's been stable and fast, and I've been extremely happy with the update.
Yeah, I haven't even had problems as far as, you know, bring it up NetShare. That, because it's doing some really advanced stuff, it's basically routing packets. It's turning your iPhone into a little router. And, you know, if you're really banging on it, pretty heavily, you know, on your computer, even if it's not, you know, saturating your pipe to the 3G or Edge or whatever, you're still, if you know, you can really slow it down because it actually has to process all that stuff. So even, you know, sometimes that, if I use it a lot, it, you know, in previous firmwares, that would actually, you know, slow down the iPhone and eventually I'd have to restart. And I really didn't have that problem yesterday when I was using it. So yeah, NetShare does work in 2.2, just as a side note.
That's good.
Yeah, that is really, really good. So do we want to talk about this jailbreak thing? I don't think I even put this in the agenda for you guys. I guess I'll just quickly mention it. I haven't really played with it because it's not working for me. But the RipDev guys have come out with a special jailbreak they've basically written out a very large post talking about why jailbreak is a bad idea for most people. And it comes down to jailbreaking your iPhone installs SSH on there for one, and also adds all the stuff, the necessary stuff for, terminal commands to happen. So you can type, you know, whatever you want into a terminal and have it happen the same way it would on a normal Unix machine. And that is a big security risk because it also, you know, with SSH, that's, you know, advertised even over Bonjour. And because, you know, 99% of people who do that don't change their password, the root password to the iPhone is always the same. And so that's a big security problem. So basically what they've done is create a special jailbreak. I don't believe it unlocks your phone. I think it's just for people who want, you know, installer and Cydia. It leaves your system partition read-only. So, and it, you know, obviously doesn't install SSH, and you can't do BSD subsystem and that kind of stuff, but you can install some applications such as Qwik on your iPhone. I tried doing it. It didn't work out for me, and I think that has to do with the fact that I'm using the new MacBook Pro. And I still I've heard reports that there's a way around that it's kind of weird for jailbreaking. I haven't looked into that, but I did talk to Erica Sadoun about it. She thought that it might have something to do with something she was experimenting with a little while ago. But basically, it still is changing stuff in your system partition. You do have to, you know, do the whole restart your phone, hold the buttons and all that stuff. But it does leave it read-only when it's all done, and you can install most of the third-party applications. So I haven't tried it, and I don't know how it impacts stability yet, and I'm kind of willing to try it out now that I got the new Mophie Juice pack and that, you know, my phone is stable. You know, I kind of want to try out Quick again. So what do you guys think? Are you guys interested at all in Jailbreak at all still?
You know, my desire to jailbreak went away almost completely as soon as the App Store opened.
Yeah, same
but
here.
But then there's little things that come up along the way, like Quick.
Mm-hmm. And there's also that other application that does the tethering, but in a different way. Just kind of as a side note, the name of it slips my mind. But basically, with NetShare, it's using a SOX proxy, which is kind of weird to your computer. With this other, you know, it's a jailbreak app. It actually turns your iPhone into an actual router. So you just say, look at this iPhone for, this is a Wi-Fi hotspot. Just log into that and use that. And it, you know, everything works instead of, you know, some stuff being weird and having problems. So that's another one of those applications that I would love to use. But yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So there we go. There's two applications that are compelling arguments for jailbreaking. But outside of that, there's really nothing for me that's compelling enough to justify jailbreaking. So I'm actually running with an iPhone now that is not jailbroken.
Yeah, so am I. And that's, I guess that's only because it didn't work out tonight. But I was, before that, I was running non-jailbroken. I think since the 2.01 update, I just kind of stopped because it was simply too unstable. And, you know, I had other things that I wanted to worry about. And I, you know, I'm realizing, obviously, you know, and we've moved in a different direction with iPhone Alley, as most people can probably tell, that we're not really focusing so much on jailbreaking and unlocking and all that stuff. It's more applications, because as we've obviously proved with our, you know, app addiction discussion, that's what most people are interested in with the iPhone now, is the third-party apps that are available without any hassle. Because most people don't really care about the NetShare thing, or the tethering thing, I should say. And, you know, Quick is cool. I think those are two, you know, exceptions to the rule. And I think obviously that's why AT&T is considering, at least according to rumors, that, you know, to add tethering. And also I think that eventually we will see Quick. But yeah, that's, I haven't really been compelled to jailbreak either. Adam, what do you think? Is it Quick and tethering for you too?
I have NetShare, so the tethering thing's not that big a deal to me. Yeah. And probably tethering is only going to be, I'm assuming, available to 3G iPhone owners. So I'm probably still out when the tethering comes around. So yeah, I mean, Quick, if I could get it with the non-jailbreak version, which I guess there's a non-jailbreak version out there floating around out there. I don't know. That's the rumor. I think Kevin Rose supposedly has a copy, right?
For NetShare or... for Quick.
Quick.
Yeah.
For Quick.
That's basically just because they're doing the ad hoc thing. And they can do whatever they want with ad hoc as long as they're not submitting it to the App Store. So, yeah.
Exactly. So, I don't know even if I'd jailbreak for Quick. I mean, I've thought about it, but it's just the risk is too great. And I enjoy my apps and my pristine iPhone way too much to,
yeah, me
to
too.
Worry about it.
Definitely. Yeah, so there you go. If you want to check it out, interested in trying this, I haven't actually gotten it to work. Erica and I have both decided that, yeah, it is messing with your... I mean, Erica has told me flat out it is, you know, messing with stuff in your system partition. So if you're thinking this is only going to affect your user partition, you know, and if something like, you know, having files changed on your system partition is scary to you, you know, don't do the jailbreak, because that's not a perfect solution. So, but it is cool if you want to check it out. Ripdev, ripdev.com/pusher. Pusher is the application. So there you go. So let's move on to our iPhone picks. Jeff, do you want to start off?
Sure. So have we talked about ITV yet?
I think we may have.
I might have mentioned it, yeah.
All right, but well, then I'll bring it up.
Well, they did an update.
That's significant. They did an update, yeah.
Yeah, well, the update, that's what added in the Netflix support, right?
Right.
Correct, yes, and that's a huge...
That's okay. So we'll talk about ITV. That's very cool. Now you can do your Netflix stuff in ITV. So not just look up your TV shows and all that, but you know, if you're like me, you're a Netflix junkie, being able to access your Netflix information in a real application is pretty nice.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't played with it yet. ITV is free, right?
It is.
Yeah, so if you have you played with other Netflix apps?
No, I haven't. Actually, as far as I know, the only Netflix apps you can get other than this, really, you have to jailbreak.
I think there are a couple other Netflix apps out there.
Really?
Yeah, I ran a search for Netflix, and it came up with a couple. I think one of them had Netflix in the name. But yeah, so ITV will do that. And so how do you like the interface for doing it? I haven't actually played with it.
You know, I've only messed around with it just a little bit, and I've been happy so far. And typically, if I don't like the way something works, I'm not going to like it right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened.
Okay, cool.
I'm such a junkie. I am on my iPhone right now, and I just went to the App Store, and I'm going to look up Netflix and see what apps are out there.
Well, and Jeff, you might want to remind everybody exactly, you know, what the core functionality of ITV is in case they did miss that episode. So,
yeah, that's probably a really good idea. Okay, so ITV is really cool because it lets you go through and see what television listings are available. And it does it really well. And you can choose the different carrier that you might be getting your service through. And let's see, what else does it do?
Movies and theaters.
That's right. It does the movies and theater stuff. I forget about that because I also have, what is that? The one with popcorn on its icon, movies.
Movies, yeah, I have that as well.
And yeah, so you can do TV shows, you can look up movies, you can now do your Netflix stuff, and you can send information about upcoming shows to your friends. So like if you're going through the listings and you realize that there's some special that all your friends would like to know about, you can forward that info to them. And that's the stuff I can remember.
See now, okay, okay, go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say another great feature is you can like schedule it to watch. So there's you get a ITV account, which I think is free online, and it syncs up with that. So you can set up your viewing schedule as well. You can say, I want to watch this at this time, and I want to watch that at that time, and it'll sync all that up to the ITV account in the cloud, which is kind of a nice feature too if you're into sort of web services online kind of stuff.
Right.
Okay, that's cool. And I hadn't even messed with that because I have TiVo, and so TiVo does all the magic for me.
Sure.
So I'm looking at the I'm playing with it. I actually did play a little bit with the Netflix thing, and I did not like the way they had it set up because I couldn't figure out how to add movies to my queue.
Oh, see, I haven't added a movie to my queue yet.
No, I just figured it out as I was playing with it. You have to.
Yeah,
it's an all-inclusive search. So whenever you search for something, it searches for, you know, stuff on TV, stuff from movies, and also Netflix. So I search for, you know, Pirates of Silicon Valley, and it shows up, you know, with a Netflix icon, so I can, you know, rent that as if I haven't already seen it, you know, 500 times.
Yeah, but you might have missed that one Easter egg in the one scene.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. There are many more details to that movie. It's a great movie. In case you guys haven't seen it, listeners, I mean, I know we have all seen it. Pirates of Silicon Valley. It's a story about Silicon Valley. It's the story about Steve Jobs and Bill Gates. So it was for TV, but it was really good.
I was going to say on the Netflix front, if you go into the My Media category on that and then go into your Netflix queue and then hit the edit button, you can, you know, move the order around and say, and you know, do all your queue management and stuff like that.
Right. But I didn't have anything in my queue, and that's why I was kind of I signed up for Netflix recently, and I had it before and I just, you know, I didn't really dig it that much. I signed up again because I like the idea of, you know, the on-demand, you know, movies that you can get now on the Mac, because it was PC only. Now you can. Did you get that? Did you figure out how to turn that special thing on? You have to have Silverlight on your computer, but
yeah, and I don't have Silverlight on my computer, so I'm not getting.
And you're not putting
it
there either. Is that the idea?
I am not putting Silverlight on my computer.
Okay.
Well, I know you can get some really good quality video off of it, but I have issues.
Well,
with
the secret to getting the special Silverlight player for Netflix enabled for those movies, because it'll normally say, "Hey, you're on a Mac, it's not going to work." You have to kind of flip a bit in your account. Basically, go to netflix.com/silverlight opt-in, all one word, and that'll flip the bit for you if you haven't already gotten. I guess it's a special email that says, "Congratulations, you can do it." But you have to install Microsoft Silverlight, which wasn't a big deal for me. I'm not having any problems with my computer, so, but yeah.
Yeah, and see, I'm having issues because, well, I've been having to use Microsoft Word quite a bit lately.
Ah.
And I have a bad taste in my mouth. Because,
no, I totally know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Adam.
Yes, sir.
Do you have an iPhone pick?
Well, I'm hoping I don't steal yours, and you'll have to tell me. I think, because... If this is going to be yours, let me know, because I have a backup pick. So
okay, should I go first then?
Have either of you got? Well, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, my pick is Frenzik.
Oh nope, so you didn't.
Okay, go ahead with yours, or should I?
So my pick is. Have you guys tried SnapTel?
No, I have not.
SnapTel.
Oh, you get your fingers ready, because you're going to want to download this one. This one is, I was blown away because I didn't think it was going to work, to be honest. I read about it. I didn't think it was going to work well at all, because some of the reviews I saw when I first heard about it were that it was not picking up as many things as people wanted. But what I've realized is they just mean things outside the category. So what SnapTel is it's a little app. It lets you take pictures with your iPhone of book covers, DVD covers. Uh-oh. I think it does music CDs, and it might do video games. Take a picture.
Oh, cool.
And you submit it, and it will then go out, recognize what that is, and then bring back the information about it. So if it's a book, it'll find listings on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. If it's a movie, it gets you to the IMDb information, the Wikipedia information, the Rotten Tomatoes reviews, where to buy it online. And you can do it with stuff that's already in your library or pictures you take directly from the app itself. Now, it won't go outside those categories. So I tried just like some grocery products or something like that. It can't find those things. So I think that's what people were complaining about. They wish it would do it with, like anything that Amazon sells. But right now it seems to be limited to just media. So books, DVDs, CDs, and I haven't tried video games yet. But and it's incredibly quick and incredibly like accurate. I just started snapping pictures of things, and I even had some pictures. Like I had a picture of a book that a really obscure book that was in this little dive diner that Victor Cahiao and I stopped at on our way to Macworld last year. And I thought it was funny just because the title, the title was "How to Cope When You're Surrounded by Idiots," or if you are one. And it found the information about that book, and it just happened to be in my library. So it is just, it's cool. And it's just one of those like amazing apps. It's like, hey, look at this. I can take a picture of this book and my iPhone will tell me what it is and find the Wikipedia entry and tell me how much it costs on Amazon and what have you. So
this so fracking rocks. Okay. See, this is what, what makes the iPhone so cool. You talk about this. I went and searched for it on my iPhone, downloaded it, grabbed a book on my desk, took a picture of it, and brought up the info before you finished your description.
and I downloaded it too and tried it out too. So yeah, this is really cool. I went weird and I decided I would play an album on my iPhone, take a screenshot, and then feed that to the app, and it pulled that up too. So
yeah, I had to do that to test it because I didn't have a book or a DVD handy. So I actually took a screenshot from Amazon and then fed it back into with my iPhone, and then fed it back into the program just to test it out. And it was amazing.
That is cool.
I just happen to have Ender's Shadow by Orson Scott Card sitting here on my desk, and so I just grabbed it, took a picture of it, and yeah, SnapTel brought it up and all the info, and dude, this is so cool.
Yeah. Wow. Awesome. Awesome pick. Snaptel, it's free. Go get it right now. Pause the podcast, go grab it, and have fun with it. And then come back and finish.
And we'll be listening here when you get back.
Yeah. So, I'm going to talk about my pick, and I already mentioned it's called Frenzic, and it is, it's my favorite game of at least this week, by the Icon Factory.
And he does have a new one each and every week, folks, so come back.
I may have a favorite one every day, but, you know, right now, it's, by the Icon Factory, it is, it's $4.99, right? I'm asking.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's $4.99. Anyway, okay. So Frenzic is a it's a puzzle game basically, and consists of having six circles that you want to fill in each circle with a sixth of a piece of the circle. So you have multicolored triangles basically that show up in the middle, and you have like 10 or 15 seconds to decide where you want to place that piece. And it already has an orientation fixed. So you have to say, okay, well, it's, up in the upper left-hand corner. I have to put it in this circle because there's, only room for one of those in this, spot. So you tap that circle and it flies over there. Basically you get points for, placing those, you get a couple points, but you get more points when you actually clear a circle. And, to clear a circle, you actually fill up the entire circle with, six pieces, and then it goes away. If you get there are different colored ones, and if you actually get a circle filled with all of the same color, you'll get more lives. And of course, you need lives if you run out of time before you can place a piece. And I don't know how much credit I'm giving the application by just simply describing it without showing you how it works, but it's incredibly fun. For $5, it's totally worth it all the entertainment I've gotten out of it so far. So if you don't believe me still and you want to see some pictures of it, go to iPhoneAlley.com/reviews and you'll see the Frenzic review there. And I actually did a video review too for it there. So check it out. I'm going to say that it's, one of those apps that you need to have on your iPhone to show it off and be Mr. Cool Guy with the iPhone. So, and it's a lot of fun.
And, I did a review of the desktop version for the Macintosh at the Mac Observer a while ago, and it's an insanely addictive game. And one of the first things I thought as I was playing this was, this so needs to be on the iPhone.
Yeah, definitely. And they had a web application for a while.
And I was playing that for a while. It was great.
Yeah. And so speaking of the web app, they also they've gone totally crazy with, first of all, it's a beautiful application, but they've done really cool things with it as well. You can, you have a certain amount of, points at the end of a game when you lose. So those scores are obviously kept on your phone, but you can also submit those. Those are automatically submitted to, I think it's Frenzic.com. And so it'll actually keep track of global scores there, so you can compete against everybody else. It also has location-based stuff in there, so you can even see, all your friends, in the area. You can compete locally as far as scores go. And you can, there's an option to send an email to yourself in the settings, and that'll grant you access to the Frenzic.com community site, where you can make friends with other people who play Frenzic and then, compete against them by looking at your, friends' scores in the application itself. So it's very, very cool. So Frenzic, it's $5 in the App Store. It rocks. I love it.
Sweet.
Yes. So I think we're all done, unless you guys have something else to talk about.
I might let me do my second pick for those children of the 80s, because it's a freebie. It's a real quick one. I'll just say on this, it's a faithful reproduction of the game Adventure, and lo and behold, it's just simply called Adventure. The game for the Atari 2600 with the colored square and the dragons.
No way, really?
Yes, and it does have the magic dot for those people who might be wondering. So. That's been confirmed. And the only thing I don't like about it is right now the only way to control it is through the tilting of the iPhone. So I think it's still kind of in development. But The developer supposedly does plan to add, you know, touch controls because it's a little bit difficult to kind of move around just by tilting the phone. But still, it's very cool to see Adventure with all the original sounds and graphics running on the iPhone.
Yeah, this is looking really, really great. There are some, you know, there are at least three colors on the screen here.
Yeah, it's you know, anybody who's not a child of the 80s with the growing up with the Atari probably isn't going to appreciate it. But those of us who do, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's free. It looks great. Free. I say free. It's called Adventure, and it is free. So yeah.
There you go.
I've already loaded it, and I'm starting to play a game.
We're doing a podcast, Jeff. What are you? Come on.
Wait, what? Oh, hey. Hey, guys. I didn't know you were here.
That's fine. I'm checking out stuff, too.
We better let him go. I have to run as well, so.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, let's do our the outro. Of course, you can go to iPhoneLA.com for more news, tips, and reviews every day. If you want to share an iPhone tip with us, you found something cool, you can submit that to us by hitting the Contact Us link in the side of the page, and we'll post that. Also, if you want us to review an application or a product, you can let us know using that same Contact Us link. We're still running a photo contest. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Basically, take any photo you want with the iPhone, and that's the only qualifier. So as long as it's been taken with an iPhone, you can submit it, and we'll be deciding on which one. We'll be doing finalists, and then choosing the our favorite one. And the prize for that is a case from Marware. And if you want to get our iPhone picks or check out the show notes, you can do that at iPhoneLA.com/podcast. So if you're driving and you don't have time to write down your the pick for the application that we mentioned, you can find that there later on. Of course, if you have any feedback for us, podcast@iPhoneLA.com. And once again, Jeff Gamet is here from the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, and of course Twitter.com/JGamet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And also Adam Christensen of the MacCast, MacCast.com, and Twitter.com/MacCast. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks, Michael.
And of course, my Twitter is Twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And with that, another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is out the door.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Yuck.
No. Who wants a stylus?
Stylus.
You have to get them.